does. That's what's keeping me up at night.
That's an environmental work, EPA worker, part of Laura Nix's remarkable series, I Do Solemnly Swear. One of the Veteran Health Administration, VA employee, warned that suicide prevention lines for veterans are understaffed and overwhelmed, raising alarm for life or death consequences. I think that population, veterans, is one of the largest suicide rates. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was really struck by the VHA worker that I spoke to. They're incredibly dedicated to their veteran clients, and they spoke very emotionally about how worried they are about their welfare in the future. And, you know, the series is directed, my co-creator Mark Weiss and I felt it was very important to focus on not just the illegality of the firings, but the impact on Americans of the hollowing out of these services and benefits. And we've depended for a very long time thinking that these benefits and the safety of our highways, our water, our airspace is safe. But we're learning that these are all being taken away. In the instance of VHA,
we have 10 seconds.
Okay, this is a population that needs help, and they're very dedicated. These public servants are dedicated and committed to providing services.
We have to leave it there. I think 18 veterans die by suicide each day. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Rev up your support for KBOO Community Radio. Have an old car taking up space? Donate it to KBOO. Your unused vehicle can become music to our ears, powering independent radio that amplifies diverse voices and community perspectives. It's easy and hassle-free. Either visit kboo.fm/cars or call 1-877-KBOO-123. You'll get a tax deduction and the satisfaction of supporting local independent media. Donate your car to KBOO Community Radio today and drive change in your community.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, last week, the Emergency Management Department of Portland City Government gave a presentation on how they plan to help improve Portland's emergency preparedness.
The Fred Meyer Gateway location is closing.
And Oregon Senator Ron Wyden has uncovered evidence in the Epstein scandal.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 21st, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. Portland's Bureau of Emergency Management gave a presentation to the Community and Public Safety Committee last week about how they plan to spend their budget with the goal of making Portland better equipped for a large-scale emergency. The Portland Chief Resilience Officer presented information from a preparedness audit that has found Portland City to be overall pretty ill-prepared for an emergency. The four levels of preparedness, according to the presentation, are critical, red, at risk, orange, impaired, yellow, and meet standards, green. None of these items in the preparedness meet national standards. In fact, almost every category is in the red or critical, or at risk of being critical. The Chief Resilience Officer says that in order to better meet the standards for emergency preparedness, the department has secured funds to hire almost 50 more positions. That will cost about $2.5 million. A price counselor, Samir Kanal, says is a, quote, literal small price to pay. These new news positions include people to oversee and alert warning systems, positions to plan the emergency operations of the city, and training an expertise manager to give trainings and implement exercises to prepare for an emergency. The chief resilience officer also said trying to implement a citywide emergency management plan is a top priority for him, so that there is coordination across many departments. The department will create a plan to improve communication and warning by implementing a system-like watch command that would be about six positions to maintain a 24-hour watch on all scale of incidents and be able to create an alert no matter what an emergency when an emergency happens. Given the current funds and their plan for preparing for an emergency would leave us with four categories in the yellow instead of red or orange by 2027.
Fred Meyer has announced the closure of its Gateway store in East Portland's Hazelwood neighborhood. The closure was confirmed on July 16th and is expected to happen in September. Unfortunately, we have made the difficult decision to close the Gateway Fred Meyer store, a spokesperson said. We will offer each impacted store associate the opportunity to transfer to a new location. This closure is part of a larger company-wide effort to operate more efficiently and ensure the long-term health of our business. The Gateway Fred Meyer has been instrumental in establishing the Gateway moniker for the surrounding shopping area. Many shoppers express concern about finding alternatives for the grocery needs, especially since the store is conveniently located next to the Gateway Transit Center, a major hub for MAX trains. I'm going to have to go to Walmart. I live by the airport, but I come here because it's closer for grabbing dinner or whatever, one shopper remarked. Details surrounding the reasons for the closure remain unclear.
U.S. Senator Ron Wyden has uncovered new evidence in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. This comes after President Trump and his administration recently dismissed renewed interest in the Epstein client list as a, quote, hoax. On July 17th, Senator Wyden, an Oregon Democrat, revealed the detailed file from the Treasury Department shows Epstein moved $1.1 billion in and out of one of his bank accounts. Among the transfers listed were wire transfers possibly tied to sex trafficking schemes that Epstein was involved in. The Treasury file uncovered by Senator Wyden is distinctly different from the already controversial documents often referred to as the Epstein files. As the top Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, Wyden stated that while the Epstein Treasury file remains undisclosed, it contains actionable information that warrants a full investigation. He noted that investigators have found links between sanctioned Russian banks and Epstein. These ties involve payments connected to women and girls from countries like Russia, Belarus, Turkey, and Turkmenistan. These are not conspiracy theories, Wyden asserted. These are real leads pointing to an international sex trafficking operation. President Trump is not the only one facing scrutiny from Senator Wyden on promises made and not kept. He also accused Attorney General Pam Bondi of intentionally blocking access to full sets of files, despite promises of full transparency during her campaign. Wyden mentioned that he made several requests to review these materials, but has been denied multiple times. He has now called on the Treasury Department to release the full Jeffrey Epstein file to the Senate so lawmakers can follow the money themselves. I don't know why Trump wants this to go away, but we're not letting it, Wyden said. No one gets to sweep us under the rug.
Wildfire season started in Oregon. Three fires stand out as the largest so far. As of this afternoon, the Burdoin Fire in White Salmon, Washington, just across the river from Hood River, has already burned over 10,000 acres and demolished 14 homes, still with 0% containment. The neighboring community of Lyle is on a Level 3 Go Now evacuation order. The Burdoin Fire started on July 18th. The Cram Fire in Central Oregon has burned almost 30,000 acres and is at 73% containment. The Cram Fire started on July 13th. The Butte Fire has burned 2,000 acres of the Warm Springs Reservation. Oregonians can sign up for emergency alerts and notifications at oralert.com, rather .gov, G-O-V. I'll say that again for clarity. Oregonians can sign up for alert notifications at oralert.gov. The website suggests that people pack the six P's for evacuation. Number one, people and pets, food, water, and hygiene, sanitation, clothing, and comfort items. Number two, prescriptions, medication, eyeglasses, and medical devices. Number three, phones, personal computers, hard drives, etc. Number four, plastic, ATM, debit cards, credit cards, and cash. Number five, papers and important documents, ID, birth certificates, social security cards, passports, visas, insurance policy details, mortgage, deeds, and retail equipment. Six, pictures and other irreplaceable, memorable items.
Last Wednesday, activists gathered inside City Council chambers at Portland City Hall, demonstrating during the scheduled City Council meeting. Anna Wilcox has more on this story.
Last Wednesday, activists gathered inside City Council chambers at Portland City Hall, demonstrating during the scheduled City Council meeting. They sat in seats available to public for watching council sessions. The goal was to encourage the Portland City Council to revoke the lease for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office on McAdam Avenue. The council evacuated the chambers after asking demonstrators to stop. They gave warnings prior to starting the meeting, indicating the council would recess if the meeting was disrupted. Councillor Angelita Morillo invited the demonstrators into another room to answer questions, hear concerns, and to talk about what the council is able to do.
We are a city council. We are up against a federal government with billions of dollars. ICE has their own enforcement, right? So they can still deploy tear gas if they think their building is under attack. We can't actually just tell them to stop.
Earlier, the group gathered outside the city hall for a press conference and a rally. People stood in a semicircle listening as organizers and those living near the ICE facility spoke about what has been happening there.
I had to take my daughter to the hospital last week because they shot tear gas and smoke last week while it was hot, like 12 o'clock at night. Everybody's asleep. People are outside screaming, close your window, close your window. I'm trying to scramble, close my window, but where they had shot it.
We're here to make pressure to the council because although they know it, I don't know, they're too scared. They don't want to get it. And they are dragging their feet, not doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is to do their job, to follow what the people of the city want and to protect the human rights of the people of this city.
This is part of ongoing reporting. Please continue to tune in for more detailed coverage. This is Anna Wilcox for KBOO Portland.
Congress cuts funding for public broadcasting. As federal school choice tax credits face pushback, Trump's Epstein troubles spread, and protests from last week through the weekend honor the late Congressman John Lewis and challenge budget impacts on vulnerable communities. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I worry about the impacts that will have on safety, security, broadcasting in our local areas. As somebody who lives in rural Utah, I think about our tribal nations as well. These are resources that are really important.
Republican Utah Governor Spencer Cox warns that eliminating federal funding for public broadcasters will disproportionately harm rural communities and tribal nations.
The GOP rescissions bill claws back $1.1 billion in funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, including $2.5 million from Utah stations, which now face deep cuts to local news and programming. Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott has called a special session to redraw congressional maps, as well as to respond to recent flooding. Civil rights groups say Abbott is taking advantage of the natural disaster to give his allies an opportunity for racial gerrymandering. Republican lawmakers say they're complying with recent court rulings. A federal school choice provision in the just-signed budget law offers tax credits to people who give money to education charities, in effect reducing tax revenue while helping families pay for private or home schooling. Brian Jodis with the American Federation for Children argues the plan will expand access without actually straining public dollars.
It doesn't impact state budgets. It doesn't impact the federal budget. It incentivizes families to be able to go apply for it and let their students benefit from it.
But Education Law Center's Maura McInerney calls it a tax shelter for the wealthy that diverts resources from public education.
We've seen this occur in other states, and there's no accountability for these dollars. Essentially, this money will potentially benefit students who are already in private schools.
Similar state programs are largely used by families with children already going to private schools. Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says the Justice Department is hiding ties between President Donald Trump and dead pedophile multimillionaire Jeffrey Epstein. Durbin quotes a whistleblower as saying the FBI assigned 1,000 employees to comb through Epstein files looking for mentions of Trump. The attorney general denies the charge and says all available files have been made public. Meanwhile, Maria Farmer, an early whistleblower in the Epstein case, says she alerted both New York police and the FBI about Trump and Epstein in the 1990s and again in 2006. She says Epstein presented her to Trump during a late-night visit to Epstein's Manhattan office. Trump has denied the charge. 1,600 demonstrations over the weekend voiced objections to cuts in the safety net to pay for tax breaks for the wealthy, along with other issues. Former Tennessee State Senator Brenda Gilmore joined a march on Nashville's John Lewis Way, honoring the civil rights icon's belief in good trouble.
We're particularly focusing in on voter rights, voter education, voter empowerment, and also speaking out with our brothers and sisters in the immigrant community, where innocent men and women are being arrested.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Adriana Adame, the 2025 fellow at Underscore Native News, about some of her recent articles. At 6 o'clock, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be a high of 77 degrees and a low of 57. And tomorrow, it will be a high of 84 and a low of 60, with some sunshine and some clouds. Today in history, 1989, Spike Lee's acclaimed film Do the Right Thing was released in theaters. The film is about urban neighborhood racial tensions, which accumulate in a tragedy and violence on a hot summer day. The quote of the day is from Do the Right Thing. "Let me tell you the story of right hand, left hand. It's a tale of good and evil, hate. It's with this hand that Cain iced his brother. Love these five fingers, they go straight to the soul of man. The right hand, the hand of love. The story of life is this, static. One hand is always fighting the other hand."
The Dena Aina people have lived on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula for thousands of years, but today the group's indigenous language isn't spoken as widely as it once was. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Dena'ina people have lived on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula for thousands of years. Their indigenous language is not spoken as widely as it once was. That's why the Kenaitse Indian Tribe is launching an interactive language learning software to help people learn Dena'ina words and phrases. As KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports, app developers say the language tool is key to preserving the health of the Indigenous community.
Okay, today is June 4th, 2025. This is the Verb Stem Dictionary, page 553.
In a small recording studio at the tribe's administrative office in Kenai, language transcriptionist Andrea Ivanhoff runs through the book's Dena'ina phrases. She's seated across from her grandmother and longtime Dena'ina language speaker, Helen McLean.
This one's a long one. I don't know. Chduts enes den ralten. Chduts enes den ralten.
Chduts enes den ralten.
Overflow ice that formed into a bluff.
They're recording content for CAN 8, Kenaitse's new language learning computer application. It's part of the tribe's cultural revitalization efforts.
For adult learners, there's no access point to learn Dena'ina.
That's Joel Isaac, Kenaitse Director of Language and Cultural Preservation. He's also the Language Apps Project Manager.
And so we're hoping that this application will help foster a love and interest and dedication to learning Dena'ina language.
The Kenaitse application, which is still in its beta testing phase, covers everything from basic Dena'ina vocabulary to full sentences. The 20-unit program is loaded with interactive games, spelling tests, and more. 8 Dena'ina people developed the app, including Helen McLean. McLean grew up speaking Dena'ina and says her language is part of her identity.
My grandma and grandpa, they tell me, you better not lose our words. You guys have to keep it.
Dena'ina people, like Isaac, say preserving the language is important because much of their culture has been lost through the deliberate suppression of Alaska Native traditions and customs.
This is like core to our identity, and it's also critical for our health and like who we are as people. So it helps heal the community by bringing health back to this place that we all call home.
In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Officials and students at California Indian Nations College joined tribal leaders and lawmakers Friday in Palm Springs to celebrate a $10 million state investment in the school and its efforts for it to become the only federally accredited tribal college in the state. Celeste Townsend, president and CEO of the college, says tribal colleges and universities uplift their communities, honor cultural knowledge, and foster student success.
For generations, the absence of a tribal college in California meant our students were left without a place that truly honored who they are. But today, with SINC's accreditation and expanding presence, that reality is changing. Now, Native and non-Native students have a place to pursue their academic goals in a space that is respectful and rooted in cultural values that sustain our First Peoples.
California Indian Nations College is a two-year college located in Palm Desert. Native American lawmaker James Ramos advocated for the state funding. President Trump is threatening to hold up a stadium deal for the Washington football team over its name, the Associated Press reports. Trump posted on his social media site Sunday saying he wants the NFL team to restore its former R-word team name. He also wants the professional Cleveland baseball team to restore its former name. Native groups, including the National Congress of American Indians, have long advocated for the end of the use of Indian mascots and logos in sports. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The news organization Fox News and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, are currently steeping in political controversy. During a recent episode of the Fox News program, The Five, host Greg Gutfeld, while speaking to the other hosts and viewers, decided he was going to speak further on the recent Camarillo cannabis farm raid in California, a raid that left one dead, at least 12 injured, an arrest of a military veteran, and 300 immigrants taken into custody. During that segment, Gutfeld suggested that Americans should normalize the term Nazi, likening it to some cultures have reclaimed formerly derogatory terms. Gutfeld continued, "So, from now on, it's, what's up, my Nazi? Hey, what's hanging, my Nazi?" Gutfeld wasn't the only Fox News host to join on the commentary. His comments drew immediate backlash from various media outlets, entertainers, and Democrats, while Republicans have remained largely silent. Mehdi Hassan, founder of Zatio, said, These quotes, even if said in jest, would destroy the careers of any other journalists on any other mainstream national media platform. But Fox doesn't employ journalists and doesn't have any journalistic or decency standards. Pointing to the fact that they are calling for the normalization of Nazism in America in real time. Democrat Hassan Piker noted, "We've officially gotten to the point where Fox News commentators are comfortable calling themselves Nazis." Current editor-in-chief of the conservative outlet of the Dispatch and former colleague of Gutfeld at Fox News, Jonah Goldberg, tried to defend him by pointing out that he understood he was joking. Nothing, her personally doesn't think he's thought this through. Goldberg added, "That's the best defense I can offer." This isn't the first time the former Trump critic turned Fox News host has floated ideas of Nazism or fascism in America. In 2023, Gutfeld floated the idea that we needed to have another American Civil War because, from his view, elections don't work and that our country was in peril and chaos.
The Director of National Intelligence has released over 230,000 pages of documents related to the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. today, thanks to President Trump's executive order. The order also declassifies documents related to President John F. Kennedy and Senator Robert F. Kennedy and their assassination records as well. Unlike the JFK assassination files, which a majority were identified and released in accordance with federal law, the files about MLK have never been declassified or even digitized until today. The documents include details about the FBI's investigation, discussion of potential leads, and internal FBI memos about the progress of the case, as well as containing never before seen CI records and Canadian police records. It has been nearly 60 years since the American people have been able to see the full scope of the federal government's investigation into MLK's assassination.
International researchers have pinpointed the moment when planets begin to form around a star and beyond the sun. A historical first time a planetary system has been identified at an incredibly early stage in its information. The newborn system is forming around a proto or baby star named HOPS 315. That is about 1,300 light years away from us and is a similar star to our sun. Around such baby stars, astronomers often see disks of gas and dust known as protoplanetary disks and birthplaces of new planets. In our solar system, the very first solid material to condense near where Earth's present location around the Sun is found trapped in ancient meteorites. These rocks are age-dated to determine when the clock started in our solar system's information. And such meteorites are full of crystalline materials that contain silicon monoxide and condense at extremely high temperatures found in commonly in young planetary disks. With the new discovery, astronomers found evidence of these hot condensed minerals in the disk around HOPS 315. Results show that silicon monoxide and the crystalline minerals are present around the baby star. The minerals were first identified with the James Webb Telescope, and using the data from it, identified the chemical signals around the star to be delinquent to the orbit of the asteroid belt around our sun. The disk of HOPS 315 provides a way for us to understand our own cosmic history and how early planetary and solar systems work and form.
The British government is currently in a landmark moment for democracy, as it would allow 16 and 17-year-olds to vote. Britain has 1.6 million people in the ages of 16 and 17. The plan has been described as the largest expansion of voting rights in decades. The last reduction in voting age began rather being more than 50 years ago. The Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, wrote in her introduction to the policy paper, quote, "Declining trust in our institutions and democracy itself has become critical, but it is the responsibility of government to turn this around and renew our democracy, just as generations have done before us," end quote. The plan also includes promises to tighten laws on foreign donations to political parties and to simplify voter registration. This follows several other nations, including Austria, Malta, Brazil, and Indonesia. The plan was not a surprise, as the center-left Labour Party has backed votes for 16-year-olds for some time now. And the idea was a main part of the official platform that allowed it to win last year's general election. The plan requires a law, which requires it moving through both houses of parliament, with the change in some time, changes some time away. The Labour Party has a large majority in the House of Commons, and the next general election isn't expected until 2029.
Mother turns her grief into a lifelong for others. Tragedy led mother of an environmental activist to launch the Resilient Activist, a nonprofit. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Sammy Aaron of Kansas City, Missouri, wants to make sure that environmental activists who take care of the planet also take care of themselves. In 2003, she lost her son, Kevin, to suicide.
He actually wrote in one of his journals, "I know all about sustainability, but I don't know how to sustain myself."
After her tragic loss, Erin wanted to ensure that other activists have resources and support to prioritize their own mental and emotional well-being. So she founded the Resilient Activist, a nonprofit that hosts in-person and online events.
We've got workshops that help activists reevaluate when they are close to overwhelm and burnout. And we have monthly climate cafes where people can share what's on their hearts.
She says it's important for activists.